Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, friends. My name is Stephen Lewis, and you are listening to The Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, Janet Connor comes forward to talk about soul writing. But before we get started, please join me in welcoming my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you tonight?
I'm doing okay. I've had some problems with my mouth, but still talking, and I love to talk. I'm looking forward to your show.
Oh, thank you. I am as well. This is a very powerful technique we'll be discussing tonight. But before we get into soul writing, can you share with us the talents and skills you use?
Yeah, I'm an intuitive. Well, I'm a psychic empath, and I utilize the tarot in order for me to make some sense of what I'm getting. I tend to talk very fast because I get a lot of information because of my feelings. And I love what I do. I love helping others.
Oh, very well. And you do a great job of it. You can find Maureen at PsychicAccess.com. Thank you for being here with us tonight, Mo. Appreciate that. And we also have with us Steve Frampton. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Stephen. Very well.
I'm so happy to hear that. Would you mind describing what you do at PsychicAccess.com?
Sure. I'm an astrologer and psychic medium. I use my astrology to help people understand themselves, their talents, their opportunities, and the challenges that they need to address in this lifetime. It's also a wonderful way of analyzing when things are most likely to occur. And with my mediumship, I enjoy connecting with spirit and helping people to connect with their loved ones and see that we continue to evolve, we continue our journeys beyond this lifetime.
Excellent, excellent. And you also do an outstanding job. We're very happy to have you here tonight. Everyone can find Steve at PsychicAccess.com. And tonight, the topic is all about personal evolution and achieving that through the method of soul writing. And we're going to have Janet Connor with us tonight to discuss that. She is a vibrant speaker, author, and teacher who actually became a catalyst for her own deep soul change after a series of personal traumas. Her landmark book, Writing Down Your Soul, published by Canary Press in 2009, is going to connect you to your extraordinary voice within. And it's consistently the number one book in the journal writing category on Amazon. Janet Connor also developed My Soul Pages, which was also published by Canary Press in 2011. And it is a unique companion journal designed to support your deep soul writing efforts. So for more information about Janet Connor, you can visit her website at janetconnor.com. And folks, that's Janet, C-O-N-N-E-R, not O-R, it's Janet Connor. And we're going to be preparing to bring her on here in a little bit. I personally am quite excited to talk to Janet, and I do believe she's ready. Hi, Janet, how are you?
Hello. Fabulous.
Well, we're so happy that you're here with us this evening to talk about soul writing. So let's go ahead and begin. You know, first of all, my big question is, you know, we hear about automatic writing all the time. So how would you compare soul writing to automatic writing?
Aside from the fact that they both use the word writing, I'm not sure they have much in common at all. Now, I've seen a couple of demonstrations of automatic writing, and I can't say that the demonstrations I've seen are necessarily universal to everyone that says they do automatic writing, but the demonstrations that I saw, the person is almost in a trance-like state, and something's coming through them, but it isn't words, it isn't English, it's movement on the page. And then when it's finished, then they look at this and try to decipher. And the other people around them would say, oh, well, I see this and I think this. Now, in deep soul writing, I know that I, Janet, am 100% present, and I am accessing something, call it the voice, call it God, call it divinity, call it infinite mind, I don't care what you call it, but it's that which is within you that is so much greater than you. And so there is this conversation. It's a conversation. And I'm speaking in English, and the voice is answering in English. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. I can see it on the page. We are having a conversation, and I recognize every word of it. I know what's happening. So my general awareness of automatic writing is that it's not a crystal clear conversation. It's a little bit more of a mystery. Is that what your experience has been with automatic writing?
I would think so, because the output seems to be so garbled a lot of times with the automatic writing. For those listening, I'm not sure if you guys have seen examples of it, but it seems as if we start out with these huge looping scrawls, and then eventually something intelligible emerges out of that.
Yeah.
But if I'm understanding you correctly, the output of soul writing is much more lucid, much more controlled, where you're affecting a connection with some entity, some voice, something inside of yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's an English conversation. Now, you're right, full speed ahead, because you're trying to get your conscious mind to shut up and get out of the way. And so I do recommend that you write very, very quickly. So capital letters, punctuation, yeah, maybe that's not all there, but it's certainly not garbled. You know that wisdom, guidance in clear, and of course when I say English, if you speak Spanish and Spanish, Japanese, and you know what has happened to some people in my courses, and they've shown me their journals, and I must confess I'm very jealous of them. If they are currently living in the United States and speaking English, but their first language is Spanish or Vietnamese, they have shown me their journals where they show up, say hello to the voice in English, and begin to tell their story and ask their questions. And sometimes, at some point, the language shifts to their native language, and they know, and they know that they know that that's the voice. I'm very jealous of them.
Yeah. Would you say that being multilingual would make it a little easier to, I mean, would you say that this is a good reason maybe to study a foreign language, perhaps to widen your access?
I don't know. I think it's just a great gift that people who have access to multiple languages, and they didn't plan on this. Every time they showed me their journals, their mouths were hanging open. They didn't expect to speak in English and get an answer in Vietnamese. But everybody does, Stephen, have what I call a signature. The voice is present and makes itself known in some very special, unique, personal, loving way to you. And so my signature might be different than yours, might be different than Maureen's, might be different than Carlos's. Everybody has this, because it's a relationship. And just like a human relationship, you have your little ways of winking at one another. You have little love names, love taps, different ways of just being fully present to one another that only you, they're special little things between the two of you. Well, this is the ultimate love relationship. And sure enough, you begin, not right away, not the first time you pick up a pen perhaps, but over time this relationship gets deeper and deeper and more trustworthy and so loving and so intimate. And you begin to notice, recognize, this is the presence of my voice. For some people, it's physical. They feel a tingling in their hand, a warmth in their chest, a movement in their arm. They feel something. For a lot of people, it's something they can see on the page, a little shift in the handwriting, perhaps, from small to big, from slanting to the left to slanting to the right. For some people, it's a shift in the pronouns. This doesn't happen to me very often, but for some people, it happens a lot, that they write, I, da 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 da, and the voice answers, you, da 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 da. That's very, very precious. My signature is when I'm deep, and we are so deeply connected. This doesn't happen all the time, and it usually happens when I need a very profound message or a piece of wisdom. But I will be writing very, very quickly. It does always happen when I'm writing very fast. And the pen almost gets heavy. And it feels like even if I wanted to, I couldn't lift it off the page. I'm sure if I really wanted to break this, I could, but I don't want to because I know how holy an experience this is. And so the pen doesn't lift off the page at all between words. And it almost feels like the pen has an energy of its own. There is absolutely, call it a psychic presence, call it a divine presence, there's an energy in that pen. And it begins to almost, I would say, write on its own. When that has happened to me, when I stop and go back and read, it's always something very deep, very important. That's a big signature for me.
Well, in your book, Writing Down Your Soul, you mention a voice. And when I say voice, I mean this as a capitalized essence, a capitalized V.
Yeah.
Voice that one listens to and heeds. What I have two questions here, essentially. A, what is that voice? And B, is there more than one of them?
Well, let's try to answer the unanswerable question. What is the voice? And as far as I can tell, absolutely everybody has their own definition. My editor, when she first got this book, to edit, and I didn't even know that my publisher had sent it off to this professional editor, but she told me about it afterwards, and she said, you know, I used to write this way, and I had stopped, and so here I am editing your book, and so I felt called to put it back into practice, and the minute she picked up the pen, boom, you know, she was really deep back in that conversation, and for her, the voice is a committee, and she writes, Dear Committee. And she edited my book with Dear Committee. And I call the voice DG, because I used to write out Dear God when I first started doing this. And I write so fast that it kind of quickly became DG. And so she was upset with this chapter in the book called Who or What is Listening. And she said, you're not making this clear. I need to know, who is the voice? Is it God? Is it an angel? Is it an emissary? And so for her, I wrote this final two paragraphs, which I'd like to read to you because I can't answer the question. So here's what I wrote, and it made her happy, so maybe it'll make you happy, Stephen. Who is the voice? Is the voice some form of divine being or consciousness? Is it an angel, guardian, or guide? Is it some sort of divine spokesperson, or is it a higher form of yourself talking back to you from a future, more advanced state? The answer is yes. The voice is all of that and more. I don't mean to be glib. The voice, you see, is a paradox. It is the largest consciousness, yet it squeezes itself through the tiniest tip of your pen. It's the massive noise of creation, yet you hear it as the faintest sound deep within your soul. It is cosmically profound, yet it speaks with you about very ordinary things. Does that paradox frustrate you? Don't worry. The voice will reveal itself to you over time. Your understanding will evolve, and your trust and intimacy will grow. In the end, the voice is who you believe it to be, where you perceive it to be, what you know it to be. Be at peace with that and enjoy the conversation.
Beautiful. That's amazing. I wouldn't expect such a difficult question to be very easily answered after in one radio program. After all, if that were possible, I think we would be hunted down by all sorts of philosophers. But it seems to me as if one cultivates a relationship with this voice, as if one doesn't just waltz in, pick up the pen, and on day one say, oh, well, hello, powerful entity that's living deep inside of me. You know, now all of a sudden we're best buddies. So one has to make an effort to cultivate a relationship with this entity, if I'm
understanding. That's the key word, I think, Stephen. It's a relationship. It's not a trick, and it's a lifelong relationship. This isn't a spiritual practice that you would say, oh, okay, let's give that a shot, and maybe after a month or a couple of months, go, yeah, okay, that was fun. Next, it's an intimate, you could almost say it's a form of prayer. This is a connection with that which is always with you, the soul at the very, very deepest level. And so, of course, it develops over time. Now, I've been writing this way since April 23rd, 1997. And I've written, I can't say every single day, but probably 90% of the days since then. I have hundreds and hundreds of journals. I'm not ready to throw any of them out, so I had to build shelves in my great big office closet in order to hold them on all, because they're treasures to me. And I am still surprised. Yeah. I could pick up a pen tomorrow morning. I typically write after I've done a little bit of my opening spiritual practice, so usually it's around 11 a.m., and every conversation is different. Sometimes it could just be, hello, and I love you, and I know you're going to help me today with such and such and such and such. And sometimes it's a real pouring out of whatever's going on in my life and really asking for some guidance. It's a relationship, just like you don't have a serious relationship with your sweetheart every day. Sometimes it's just a light little kiss on the cheek, and it's very sweet. But I am surprised after this many years that the voice still surprises me, the intimacy still surprises me, the wonder of it still surprises me. So I think, you know, right up till the day I die, I think I'll be engaging in this even when I can't pick up a pen, because one of the really fun things, you at Psychic Access totally understand this, you have this connection, this communion off the page as well. It's not just in the 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes that I'm writing. This voice is with me all the time, even when I'm sleeping.
Right. That's very interesting, Janet. I got to say, I think at first, when you first articulated this method and theory to me, I dare say I was a bit confused, because I saw it in a theurgic, i.e. a magical type of a function. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll do this in order to manipulate my reality. I'll do this in order to extract a certain type of result. And you set me straight on that, in the essence that, you know, this the main point of this is formalizing this relationship with the voice inside of me. However, I do think that once we make an effort to do that and to reach out to that authentic part of our true selves, this voice, mm-hmm. whatever this mysterious entity is, I mean, wouldn't you say it's really impossible for our external reality not to be affected somehow by that?
Well, that's the paradox, is that you're not picking up a pen with the intention of getting something. You're picking up a pen with the intention, and that is step one in the 7 steps to get into Theta. Set your intention. And the intention is simply to go deep. The intention is to access the divine within by whatever name or nature you perceive it. That's your intention. Not, how can I turn the universe into my ATM machine? And yet, as I discovered, you know how I discovered this? I was going through an extraordinarily traumatic divorce. And I was sitting alone in my living room sobbing, I think for about 3 or 4 months, with the blinds shut, because I truly thought I might be the victim of a drive-by shooting. I was utterly useless, couldn't function, couldn't move, couldn't say a prayer, and my puppy... It is one of the most amazing stories. My puppy went into my office, somehow got off the shelf my untouched copy of The Artist's Way, and dragged it to me. Now, I don't care what kind of shape you're in, no matter what you're going through, at that point you do look at this puppy at your feet dragging this book that's bigger than he is and say, oh, I do think help has arrived. You know, I better pay attention here.
Sure.
And I started reading The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. I had never opened it, and I only made it, Stephen, to page 15. That's honestly as far as I needed to go, because on page 15, listen to what I read. Anyone who faithfully writes, she calls them morning pages, I don't care. You can write at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't care. Anyone who faithfully writes morning pages will be led to a connection with a source of wisdom within. When I am stuck with a painful situation or problem that I don't think I know how to handle, I mean, isn't that the perfect description of someone sitting in the living room with a blind shut? I will go to the pages and ask for guidance. That's the entire message the universe needed to get to me. I hope Julia Cameron's not listening, because I have to confess I stopped reading at that point. I've never finished The Artist's Way, because what I needed, what my soul needed in that moment was delivered, done, finished. And I ran into my office, because you know if I had an untouched copy of The Artist's Way, I had an untouched journal, right? Duh. And I picked up a pen, and because they had no instructions, I had never read a book on journaling, I didn't finish The Artist's Way, I didn't know what to do, so I would say now, followed my soul's directions, my internal intuition, my knowing, even though I didn't know that I knew. And I wrote, Dear God, comma, across the top of a page. And I swear, even in that state, I sensed, when that comma hit the page, I sensed something, someone, somewhere, making itself known, and almost saying, almost as if I could hear it, saying, yes, dear, yes, is there anything you'd like to tell me? And that began what is now a multi-decade-long conversation.
I got to tell you, for those who go out to read Writing Down Your Soul, Janet Connor was a person who's, I mean, things were literally unraveling, if I dare say. That's one thing that impressed me about the act of soul writing is that it seemed as if it were the lifeline that you sort of in desperation just latched onto, and it saved you in a lot of ways. I found that to be remarkable. Well, let me just, okay, you know, naturally when you confront somebody with something healthy, something that's good for them, it's natural that we come up with all sorts of excuses not to do it, right?
Yeah.
So here's my excuse. Well, Janet, you know, I can't spell my way out of a wet paper bag. You know, I don't know the difference between a subject and a verb and a direct object. You know, I don't have any literary ability. Is there another method for me? Can I just, for example, journal or speak or do my soul writing? Can I connect with this powerful entity through talking into a voice recorder or through, you know, some other way? Because I don't feel as if I have any literary ability. What would you say to me if I...
Well, number one is, although we're using the verb writing, this has absolutely nothing to do with your sophomore high school nasty English teacher, you know, is, the pen is simply a vehicle. It's simply a tool to open this channel just a hair below conscious mind, and it is a miraculous, miraculous tool. There are all kinds of neurological things happen when we're writing. For example, visualize yourself with a journal in your lap, and your pen is going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's crossing the midline, the shushumna, in your body, and neurologically, this is one of the most important things you can do. Staying always in your left brain and always in your right brain is not a whole human function. So without you thinking about it, planning anything, you simply are automatically kind of weaving yourself back together. Pennebaker's research, which I quote in Writing Down Your Soul, makes this so crystal clear. So here's once again one of the funny paradoxes about writing at the soul level. Right away, first of all, you're writing very, very fast. And consequently, there's no endings on the words, there's no sentences, they're kind of phrases. Just the way you talk to people, if you could tape record yourself, you hardly ever speak a full sentence to anybody. We instead kind of throw out words and phrases and sounds. Well, this is the kind of conversation you're having. So you really think God cares whether or not you know how to spell Massachusetts? It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. And if you could see my pages, they're an absolute mess. And there's no capitals, there's no punctuation. And, you know, let's say I'm writing about my son. His name is Jerry. I am not going to write capital J-E-R-R-Y with a nice little loop on the Y. I just sort of make this slash, you know, God knows I'm talking about Jerry. I know I'm talking about Jerry. And we're going to move on to the thought, the question, not is this an English sentence. So it's called writing, but it has absolutely nothing to do with English grammar, subjects, sentences, punctuation. Doesn't matter. Let that go. I'll tell you a funny story that I hope illustrates that. I was visiting, speaking in Austin, Texas, and a woman who loves my work invited me to please come to a workshop group she had that night. I said, sure. And so I'm talking about writing down your soul and reading them things and answering their questions, and the woman sitting next to me in the circle, she leans over and she looks at my journal, and she says, can I say something? I said, sure. She said, that's a mess. And I looked over at her journal, and I realized right away the problem. Her journal was perfect. I mean, perfect. Everything was in a straight line. The margins were perfect. And I know, and I know that I know, that when you write that way, you're not letting go. You're not writing at the soul level. You're not asking the questions that are bubbling up from your gut. So I said, may I suggest an experiment? And she looked at me and said, yeah, okay. I said, okay, the next time you pick up a pen, tomorrow morning, would you please visualize on your shoulders your mother, your father, your English teachers, all the judgmental people. And she started to giggle. And I said, and I want you to whack them off your shoulder. And I went whoosh and smashed the air over both my shoulders. She was horrified because she's an Indian by, not Native American Indian, but Indian, and was raised to achieve. She was a lawyer, and you just must be perfect, and life must be in control. And I looked at the look on her face and thought, I don't think she's going to do it. But, hey, I tried. The next time I saw her a year later, when I came back to Austin, she almost knocked me over. She hugged me so hard, she ran across the room. And I had forgotten. And she said, oh, my God, I have to tell you. I have to you. And she was still whacking all of those controlling voices inside her head off her shoulder, and her life was utterly transformed in that year.
That's
so
amazing.
Stephen, whack all those judgmental voices,
whack.
And any thoughts that you have that this is about writing a proper English sentence, just whack any of those judgmental people in your life off your shoulders.
It seems to me as if the whole point here is to sort of write unthinkingly, as quickly
exactly.
as you can, even you resorting to shorthand or abbreviations
yeah.
if you have to. I
yeah.
see. Because once we observe what we're writing and start making value judgments on it, then maybe we're stepping outside the boundaries of the exercise.
Well, and that's why we write quickly. It is a trick. It's a trick. But it's a trick that leaves your conscious mind, which is nothing but a cacophony of judgmental voices. Your mother's in there, your father's in there, every teacher you have ever had, every minister, every professor, every ex-lover, all the people that told you you'll never make it. You're not, you think they're, just because they're not in your house anymore, that they're not inside of you. All that judgment is alive because those are neural pathways in your brain. Yes, I mean, we can joke about it, but if you were repeatedly told, let's say starting at, you know, at the age of 2 by your grandmother, you know, you're not very handsome, or, you know, you're not the smartest child in this family, or life is hard, or anything, you know, or gosh, you're going to do something about losing a little weight there, honey? And we repeat those things, and we repeat them, and we repeat them, and we repeat them. And those become literally carved edges in your brain. Those neural pathways aren't just an idea. They're ridges. They're real. And that's not Janet's knowing. I don't have degrees in brain science, but I have read about, researched, and pursued in order to understand why writing down your soul is so transformational. And this is what I've learned, is that when we repeat a fear experience and a fear thought and a fear judgment, a negative judgment, we're literally wiring over and over again that thought, and it literally builds these neural pathways in your brain.
I got to tell you, Janet, it seems to me as if one of the values of deep soul writing is that in our quest to contact that true loving source within us, that voice, the true capital V voice, the act of soul writing perhaps makes us confront. It's, I mean, the mental picture I get is of a fossil emerging from the ground. You know, it makes us confront this harmful psychological script that we might have. You know, grandma telling us that we're not the sharpest knife in the drawer, or, you know, dad telling us we need to hop our rear ends up on the treadmill to drop a couple of pounds. It seems as if the deep soul writing helps us to confront those really harmful scripts and voices to, in order to silence them so that we can progress beyond them and really interface and commune with the capital V voice inside of us, that is God or the source or the creator of all or whatever you want to conceive of it. What do you think about this idea of the soul writing helping us to confront, for lack of a better word, these demons or these harmful psychological beliefs and self-defeating ideas that we have about ourselves?
What it does, and you're sort of naturally stepping into the four steps of writing down your soul. The first one, which actually we've been talking about, is show up. You got to show up. It's a relationship. Pick up a pen, say your prayers, say hello, set your intention, start the conversation going. But the second step is open up. And that's what you're talking about now. So you show up as you are in that moment. And so if you are concerned about something, you show up concerned. If you're frightened, you show up frightened. If you're ecstatic about something, you show up and you open up and you tell that story. And so whatever it is that starts to bubble up, you don't try to edit it. You don't try to push it down. You don't try to cover it over with some positive affirmation. I am prosperous. When you're scared to death about how you're going to make the mortgage payment this month. And I discovered this by accident during the divorce, because I was showing up and opening up every day on the page with the next thing that I was terrified about. And I was, I guess because I didn't, well, you understand, I didn't even know what I was doing. I just knew that I could pick up a pen every day, say, good morning, DG, comma, and start a conversation talking about what was going on in my life and my son's life. And I noticed that as I got finished venting, so okay, fine, I will vent for 20 minutes. And then when I got tired of venting, I would ask a question. And that's when the wisdom, that's what triggers the voice. You open up and tell your story in all honesty, all your emotions, all your feelings, all your fears. You're not going to pretend to be any more put together than you really are. You show up and open up in a very real way, but then ask a question. The subtitle of the book is How to Activate and Listen to the Extraordinary Voice Within. Well, you know how you activate it? Questions. Questions are magic. One of the first things you asked me at the beginning is, you know, that you thought this was magical. You want magic? There you go. You show up, open up, and start asking not puny questions, but big questions. And the voice will not hide from you. The voice absolutely will show up. And because you're writing really fast, and that editor, all those critical voices, all those editors are kind of going, wait, come back, come back. You know, they don't have a chance to get in because you're writing so fast. Then the voice, the wisdom, the divinity, the intuition, the guidance, it does come through. And because you're writing really fast, you don't edit it either. I'll give you a...
I tell you, I'm...
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to break in here. We're going to take a real quick 1 minute commercial break, Janet. But when we come back, if you don't mind, I would love to explore the relation between soul writing and achieving the theta state and perhaps doing things like enhancing your creativity and things like that. I would also like to remind everybody listening that you can find Janet Connor. I apologize. I just made you Irish by accident. Sorry, Janet.
Oh, I'm Irish.
You are Irish. Okay, well, we're going to drop the O anyway. You can find out more about Janet Connor, find out more about her books, her courses, all of her offerings at janetconner.com, and that's CONNER.com. We will be back in 1 minute.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Welcome back to the Psychic Viewpoint. You're listening to Janet Connor discussing deep soul writing. And right before we went to break, Janet, you were actually sharing with us a personal example of how to use deep soul writing in response and to answer questions, which is a very, very interesting method. Would you mind maybe expanding more on that concept?
Well, I just want to give you an example because, you know, when we talk about, it's nothing like a story. Here is an actual example. So see if this doesn't kind of tie all of these loose ends together. I was teaching Writing Down Your Soul, as I do once a year, my live annual telecourse in January and February. It's available as a recorded version, but I teach it live at the beginning of every year. And there was a woman in Minneapolis in the course. And she calls the voice Dear Universe. And she began to get very angry with herself because she said, here I am again. You know, I've purchased a course, I've spent the money, I bought the book, and I'm not writing every day. I'm not engaging in the practice. And I do this to myself all the time. Now, so she picked up a pen and she said, Dear Universe. And she started venting and bitching and complaining and moaning and finally asked, what is wrong with me? Why do I do this? Why? And she's writing very, very fast. So she couldn't edit, and then she read to us verbatim what the voice said. Listen to this. Grant yourself an amnesty. Apply a peace treaty to your heart. You are no longer your own enemy. That is the voice. That is the voice responding to a question burning up from the soul. And can't you tell, Stephen, listening to that? Oh, I mean, if I said that to you, if I showed that to you, wouldn't you know that is the voice?
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, when you can recognize the right crystal by flicking it with your fingernail. You know, it has a signature ring to it. I would imagine you can recognize the utterances of the voice because they are, well, they allow you a wisdom that you yourself might not be able to have. And, you know, you recognize it as being foreign.
Exactly. You know, and you know that you know that you didn't say that. That didn't come from you. It's bigger than you. It's wiser than you. But it's also a perfect illustration of this other aspect of the voice. Yes, it's always exactly what you need in that moment. That is exactly the comfort she needed in that moment. But it's utterly universal at the same time. Is there anyone that doesn't need that message and isn't comforted by that message? Grant yourself an amnesty. Apply a peace treaty to your heart. You are no longer your own enemy. So it's utterly tiny and personal and in the moment while being the size of the universe.
I'll tell you what it reminds me of, Janet, just I guess sort of my own impressions as a newcomer, but it really reminds me of the, you know, the old medieval alchemical processes where one burns off and burns away all of the dross and corrupting materials until all that's left is the pure metal. You know, here by soul writing, we're burning away all of the dross, all of the negative and unhelpful voices and mental processes until what we're left, we've isolated the pure metal, the wisdom of the source. It's very interesting.
It's a beautiful metaphor. And then what you discover in alchemy and you discover in writing down your soul is that voice is with you all the time. It's with you in the shower. I joke that the shower is the phone booth to God. I don't think I could take a shower without getting a download. So it's still the voice, but it's not on paper. And I am awakened always in the middle of the night between 3 and 4 when the Earth's Schumann waves are, you know, oh, thanks a lot, voice. Could I please sleep through the night? The answer is no. I'm always awakened and given beautiful messages in the middle of the night. If I go for a walk, I'll hear something. I could just be walking around my house and hear something. And the car. Now, not if you're trying to carry on a conversation with another person in the car, but if you're alone in the car, I'll speak my half out loud, and then I'll speak the voice's response out loud, and nobody thinks you're crazy anymore. They just think you're on a cell phone. And so I can have this conversation in the car. I've gotten phenomenal information in the car. The voice is absolutely always with us.
Now, this is... because we're coming, unfortunately, to close to the end of our time here, and I did want to explore what soul writing can do for one in terms of helping a person to achieve a theta state. And I'm interested, yeah. Because I swear, for all the world, you mentioned some very interesting nomenclature there. You said you would receive a download, for example, and it seems to me almost as if you've been doing this for a while that now you can communicate with this source almost without having the pen in hand. So how does all of this stuff, you know, relate to achieving a theta state? What is the theta state? And all of, I'm very curious about the theta state.
The theta brainwave state is it. The theta brainwave state is the state you're in when you are claircognizant, clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient. The theta brainwave state is where you are in deep soul writing. The theta brainwave state is where you have to be for any real creativity or breakthrough thinking. And every single person on the planet can access it naturally 2 times a day. As you're falling asleep and your brainwaves are slowing down from the ultra-fast worry brainwave of beta, then it slows down to alpha, which we usually think of as the flow state. You know, when you're doing some really good work, maybe a script for your show, then you look up at the clock and go, look at that, where'd the time go? You've been in deep alpha. But in deep alpha, you're rearranging, collating information that is already inside of you, things you already know, maybe creating something new out of them, but it isn't new information. But then when your brain waves get really slow, right before delta, which is sleep, that's creativity. It's like a portal to divine mind and creativity. And that's what happens when we write at the soul level. All that's happening when you pick up a pen and write this way, and I'll very quickly give you the 7 steps to get into theta, then you slip into theta, and when you're in that really deep state, like I described, when the pen has an energy of its own, that's mystical theta. I get all my books. My big signature series is called Your Soul Wants 5 Things. I was lying in bed in the morning, the second time when you naturally have access to theta. But what do? We hear the alarm and we jump out of bed and we leave this creative bank. We leave it empty on the pillow. But I've trained myself. I stay in bed and just lie perfectly still. I heard one morning as clearly as if someone was standing at my left ear, your soul wants 5 things. And that's what I'll be doing for the rest of my life, teaching these 5 courses, writing all of these books. Writing down your soul is simply the first thing your soul wants, to connect with Source. So here's how you get into theta. So if anybody's listening, I'm going to do this really, really fast, so grab a pen And, of course, all the information is at JanetConnor.com and in Writing Down Your Soul. And in all of my companion journals and books after Writing Down Your Soul, I actually always at the front of the book list these seven steps. Number one, set your intention. We already talked about that. Number two, address the voice by name. And there's a chapter in the book where you will be given. It's simply as the relationship grows, you ask, what is our private and personal name? Everybody gets a name. Everybody gets a name. And so it's part of that intimacy that you say, dear Abba, dear beloved, dear one, dear friend. Number three, write by hand. And there isn't time to go into all the neurological glories of writing by hand, but visualize this. If you try to do it on the computer, first of all, your left hand and your right hand never cross. There's no integration. There's no neurological integration. And number two, the minute you misspell something, and of course, if you're typing very, very quickly, it's going to be a mess, then it's a mess on the screen, and your eye picks up that information, delivers it to your brain, and you are yanked back into judgmental editing conscious mind if you can hold a pen right by hand. If you can't, get voice recognition software. Number four, activate all five senses. You don't have to worry about vision, that's obvious. You actually don't have to worry about hearing, because the brain people have measured that when you're writing, all of the portions of your brain responsible for hearing are firing. You are hearing what you write. And obviously it's a physical activity, so touch is engaged. So that just leaves smell and taste. Smell is our most powerful scent. We want to get out of conscious mind. Smell gets you into the limbic brain instantaneously. And so I light a scented candle. You can do whatever you like, but always, always activate the sense of smell, and you'll be like Pavlov's dog. The minute you activate the particular scent that for you represents this connection with the divine, poof, you'll be slipping into theta. And then I explain in the book how we engage taste. It comes from the ancient Navajo tradition. You drink a little water after you're finished, whispering out loud the wisdom and the guidance and the grace that came through. And that way you are literally taking those blessings into your body at the cellular level. Number five, ask lots of open-ended questions. The book has 45 pages on questions. There are five categories of questions that are pure magic. Number six, write fast. We've talked about that quite a bit. And number seven, be grateful. Say thank you. I even write it out every single time as I'm saying goodbye, because you were heard, whether you think anything happened or not. You were heard. So never leave out number seven, be grateful. That list has almost nothing in common with standard journaling. And you can go to my website or look at the back of Writing Down Your Soul. There's a long two-column comparison of Writing Down Your Soul and traditional journaling. You'll be shocked. They have almost nothing in common.
I've got to admit, point number three I thought was very, very important. The actual act of writing longhand using a pen, because this is what surprised me, Janet, the notion that our hand crossing the midline of our body, that this integrates our brain, our left side and the right side of our brains. I found that to be very, very pleasantly shocking. And it seems to me as if a lot of these points have to do with letting your voice know, or your deeper self, or even letting yourself know that, hey, the time, you know, now is the time I'm going to try to connect with this spirit or entity or whatever it is. It seems that like they're cueing mechanisms, like you said, Pavlov's dog situation, where you're ringing the bell, you're letting yourself know that it's not time for this, that, or the other. It's time to connect to the source.
Yeah. And writing by hand, I highly recommend, even people that don't want to write, don't like writing, try it. Pick up a pen, say hello to the beloved, call, just say, dear beloved, dear one, dear friend, and just begin to pour your heart out, tell your story, be present, ask a few questions, and find out for yourself.
Now, your book is extraordinarily interesting, Writing Down Your Soul. And you say that you have some other book projects in on the table here. Or I know that you're also, you do courses. How else can I find you? What other pies?
Well, it is, everything is at JanetConnor.com. And I do teach live all five courses in Your Soul Wants Five Things. The second book that came out a year ago is The Lotus and the Lily. And that's about how to create life, because your soul doesn't want life to push you around. You want to use all your soul talents and create a truly beautiful and abundant life. But it's 180 degrees different from anything you've read in the Prosperity Law of Attraction books. This is going back to the original teachings of the two great masters, Buddha and Jesus. Neither of them taught the law of attraction. They both said, doesn't matter what you want. It's about creating fertile conditions. And so I teach that course live at the end of every year. We're starting on November 17th. So if anybody wants to go to JanetConnor.com and subscribe, they'll always know about all the courses. And for Writing Down Your Soul, it is available right now for the month of October as a recording for just $99. And they can find that on JanetConnor.com. And then my next book, Stephen, it doesn't come out till next spring, but it's The Third Thing Your Soul Wants is to Commit to Values. And the book is called Soul Vows, Gathering the Presence of the Divine in You, Through You, and As You.
Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait. I thoroughly enjoyed Writing Down Your Soul. It's really not only very practical and useful, but also a moving story in its own right. And in it, you mentioned the concept of neural pathways and how we establish habits very subtly, harmful patterns of thinking that might sneak up on us before we're even aware of them. How can this type of soul writing, is it possible to perhaps rewire some of these pathways, mm-hmm. or at least begin the work of rewiring these pathways and undoing some of these bad habits?
That's my understanding from the brain scientists, is that although the old neural pathways are there, the brain is plastic. That's the language they always use. And because it's plastic, when you start rewiring, repeating positive new thoughts, new understandings, take the guidance of the voice and begin to live it, then lo and behold, you are actually building new neural pathways. And the science says that it takes 30 days of repetition to build a new neural pathway. So let's say you decided to meditate. If you do it here and there and here and there, you're not building a new neural pathway. But if you committed to show up every day for 30 days and meditate, you would be building a new practice, and literally a new neural pathway in your brain. And that's why I created the 30-day guide to writing down your soul. And so it breaks the book into 30 little segments and gives you 30 little prompts, because if you do it every day for 30 days, you will have built, literally, a new neural pathway in your brain. Now, I've heard from the brain people that it takes 30 days to build a new neural pathway, but it does take 40 to really integrate it. So I didn't know that when I created the 30-day guide, so it's a 30-day guide. But I encourage people, don't stop now. And, of course, why would you stop? Because at that point, you have this delicious conversation going. Nobody stops. Sure. Everybody says, oh, my God, this is so much fun. They look forward to picking up a pen and having a conversation with their beloved. But it does apparently take 40 days to really integrate something new into your life.
40 is a number sanctioned by a lot of mythologies mm-hmm. and spiritual systems. I got to tell mm-hmm. you, your programs really seem to me as if they would benefit writers and artists and other people a lot. You also do a show as well, like on...
Yeah, I have a radio show. In fact, I did it today, so I posted on Facebook, well, the tables are turning. I went from being the interviewer on The Soul Directed Life, which is on the Unity.fm network. I'm always live on Thursdays, but a person can subscribe at iTunes or listen to the podcast anytime they want. Just go to unity.fm, program The Soul Directed Life.
I've got to tell you, I'm very impressed with your work, Janet. I highly recommend your book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Again, just for the story in its own right, it's very instructive and enlightening. But the method that you articulated in that book is quite useful. Again, if you're listening to this and you've got a novel on the back burner or any kind of artistic project, you can't afford not to explore this material because it's creative dynamite. Wouldn't you agree?
Janet, oh, absolutely. I did. Well, that's the fourth thing the soul wants, is to express its beauty fully. And I teach two creativity courses in the summer, and we focus on creating in what I call the intersection. The intersection is, imagine two circles overlapping and creating a Vesica Pisces shape. That Vesica Pisces shape is the result of your spiritual practice overlapping with your craft, whatever it might be. So, yeah, it's an explosive way. Once you're in the intersection, you almost want to raise your hands and say, okay, hold back here. People ask me about writer's block, and I have no idea what they're talking about. I have to say to heaven, hello, excuse me, I can write one book this year, okay? One. Hold your ideas, please. Thank you.
I would imagine that soul writing would completely nullify or at least reduce any kind of a blockage.
When you have
a source to query and ask questions, anytime you come upon a roadblock, then, you've given yourself an advantage creatively.
Well, and just get yourself back in theta. Take a shower and just allow those ions and that warmth and that white noise. Have a conversation in the car. Go for a long walk. But most importantly, don't get up in the morning. Lie in bed. You're already in this delicious, rich, all your thoughts are just oozing with theta. You'll be astonished. The problems will be solved. The next painting will be given to you. You'll receive the next measures of your music. It's creativity playground, and we jump out of bed.
Yeah, I've always thought that Western society has chosen the wrong way to wake up in the morning. I mean, an alarm clock that's braying and screaming. I mean, seriously, why not just hire somebody to slap you repeatedly in the face in the morning to wake you up? You know what I mean? Or maybe smother you in your pillow for about 35 seconds. Well, Janet, look, we've come to the end of our time together. Unfortunately, this hour has melted away. Thank you so much for coming up here to discuss all of this useful, fascinating material. Thank you so much, Janet. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen. What a wonderful service your show is. I'm grateful to be a part of it.
Oh, thank you. We're very proud to have you here, Janet. And everybody listening at home, by all means, visit Janet Connor at janetconnor.com. And again, she's a Connor with an E, Conner.com. Pick up her book. You'll be eternally grateful that you did. It will definitely help you. Get the workbook to it while you're at it. Take her courses and listen to this teacher's voice on Unity FM. You will be glad that you did. Janet, thank you very much, and I wish you lots of blessings in everything that you do.
Bless you too, Stephen. Thank you.
Likewise. We'll see you later, Janet. Okay. As I've mentioned, you can find out more about Janet at janetconnor.com, and I would like to take a moment to make a few announcements. We'd like you to stay tuned for the second half of our show to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We will announce that call-in number later, so be sure to have your pen and paper ready. If you couldn't get to last week's show with Steve and Joelle and Stopeye on hypnosis and past lives, you're going to want to find a recorded archive link of that fascinating interview, as well as archives of all previous fascinating interviews on psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the Archives tab. We'd like you to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. It's our goal to connect with as many of you as possible, so please share that link with others. Also, visit psychicbloggers.com to learn about everything pertaining to the paranormal, everything from reincarnation to the how-tos of psychic development. If you need a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts. Every psychic has a detailed profile for you to find out more about them. You can choose from a list of the most authentically gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high expectations required of each psychic. All of the co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access. And if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at PsychicAccess.com. We would love to hear from you. By the way, site owners and webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading for traffic that's referred to psychicaccess.com. For more details, visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. If you like our show, by all means, invite your friends to join us in our chat room and listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everyone, so please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Now, let's see if Maureen is available.
Yes,
here.
I'm here.
Whoa, Maureen, whoa.
I know, awesome. Really, huh?
Well, I mean, you know how it is.
I know.
I mean, we've all been there. We've all been there.
I know. I was consciously being mindful of that this evening.
Well, what did you think about the proceedings? What did you think about
it? You just had a lovely guest on. I just want to make that perfectly clear to everybody listening. She's just was lovely. And, you know, when she's talking about journaling or just anything like that, it's interesting. You know, journaling or the word journaling has become pretty popular. I think it has. But it's always been the case. Like, you know, I had a diary. In fact, I still have my diary. It's pretty pathetic. It was pretty much a verbally bashing everybody. but I've kept journals. And, you know, it's interesting. She's talking about the artist's way. And it just warmed my heart. And I picked it up when right before she left. And I walked over. And I have this book. And it's about doing the morning pages she's talking about. That book really helped me. But, you know, I looked on it, and I didn't get paid past page 54. I think she said the same thing. It was really funny. I opened it up. In fact, I even had it, you know, when you fold over a corner. I'm like, ooh, that's pretty cool. And the last part was talking about the crazy makers in your life. And I started, that's all I needed to go. But she's just was wholeheartedly talking, just lovely. And she dressed, you know, what she was talking about, she would read the insert, I guess it was an insert in a book about, you know, people asking, where do you get your information or where is it coming from? And she was so gracefully just said exactly what it was. You know, it doesn't have to be, it's anything, it's all that, you know. And that's a real sore subject because sometimes people, you know, as I've found out, they want to know, where are you getting your information? Is it coming from, you know, guardian angel, from some guide? And, you know, I wrote a blog on it, psychicbloggers.com. It's called No Angels, No Guide, Just Me.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
It's a very good blog. I thought it was a pretty good one. I did it a couple of years ago because I found a lot of people were asking that a lot. And I'm thinking, you know, so I loved how she explained it, Remember you said, I wish everybody could. She really summed it up. And she read, was that an insert she was reading from, Steve, I think?
It was, yes, it was.
Yeah. She writes well. And, you know, she just was just a lovely guest, a lovely woman. And she was so authentic and just, I just really enjoyed it.
I got to tell you something, Maureen. You know, I like to journal a lot. And, you know, while sometimes it's more just sort of keeping a tab on my days instead of, you know, deep soul writing. You know, when I go back and I revisit my journal entries, I swear to God, it's like taking a trip back in time. You know what I mean?
It is.
It's weird.
You know what's really weird is looking at how good my penmanship. She's talking about that one woman who had perfect journal writing. I loved how she was right on about that. And then I started thinking, well, then that's okay. Because, I mean, I can't even read some of the stuff I write now. But when I was younger, it was really perfect. But that was where all the judgment's coming from. But it does. It's really something. It's almost like you don't know. Well, who is that person? Who is that person? It's like, you know, like if you look back years, it can be so helpful. And I'm all for, you don't jump out of bed in the morning. I'm all for that. I don't do morning. I don't do mornings. But, yeah. I'd like to read your writings. I'm going to get to them and read them out loud.
You're too young, Maureen. You're too young.
Okay. I
do like what she said, though, about this whole, you know, when you first wake up in the morning, you know, I do think that my thoughts and my mental environment when I first wake up, there's something special about that. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It's almost I feel as if I'm closer to some sort of special world. And also right when I'm falling asleep, too, that moment is also very fruitful for me.
Well, it is actually the truth of a matter. It's right before isn't it? Right, F Delta, Alpha, whatever.
One of those.
One of those, yeah.
I'll share with you a trick I learned, Maureen, in some book or the other. I can't remember who wrote it, but the trick is this. If you're laying in bed during one of these times, you know, right when you wake up, right when you fall asleep, and you get a great idea like how to end world hunger or whatnot, you know, if you take a piece of paper or Kleenex and ball it up and throw it on the floor, then when you finally get out of bed, you'll see the crumpled up Kleenex or paper. And it'll come back to you. You know what I mean?
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It's like a memory trigger.
Exactly.
Your memory trigger.
Yeah, you don't have to get up.
That's smart. No, that's very smart. In fact, that's probably one of those things that I don't know why I call it a memory trigger of some sort.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah,
it's not a snot rag. Not a snot rag. You're saying
no. No.
I know. I'm just joking.
Well, I mean, if you're like me, you know, when you get that, the catch-22 here is that you're having genius thoughts, but then again,
yes,
you're about to fall asleep. You know what I mean? You don't feel like getting up and pulling.
No, you don't. But no, that's a good. That's a good little trick because you know it's like a trigger. It's like a trigger. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Steve, are you there close to your mute button, my friend?
I am.
Whoa, everybody is just on the ball tonight.
I had my finger on the trigger.
You had your finger on the trigger. Well, I wanted to ask you specifically about, you know, I talked to Janet tonight in comparing soul writing to the alchemical procedure of burning off the dross and leaving the pure metal. And, you know, the pure metal in this case being spirit or source or whatever it is that we get to when we finally do soul writing in the right way. And I wanted to get your opinions on A, this process of soul writing as an alchemy, and also B, the idea of using words in a theurgical or magical fashion, the importance of words to creating magic in your life.
Okay, I think I'll take the second question first, if that's okay.
However it's comfortable for you, my friend, by all means.
Well, I know from my studies that everything is correlated. So if you consider the archetypes of the planets and the signs of the zodiac and how they map to tarot cards, but take it even further and consider that they map to sounds, to colors, places, etc. If they map to sounds, then when we speak, the letters that we're using in our alphabet represent, in effect, ingredients, energetic ingredients. And it's very interesting to look at the numerology of words. So, for example, 33, the number 33 is the energy of Christ. And if you break down the name Christ, the word Christ, numerologically, then it does come to 33, the energy of Christ. And therefore, when we speak, we're projecting energies. We're focusing upon different energies, different frequencies. So what we say is extremely important because we're focusing upon these energies, and what we focus upon, we become. So I think that it's extremely important to consider our words. And also, if you say to yourself, well, the words a person is using, the things that they are saying reflect what they are focused upon, what their mind is focused upon, that's really important as well, because whatever the mind focuses upon will remold the astral body or the soul. And so we're actually creating change when we speak, when we think, when we focus upon things, and that change occurs first on the soul level, but then after a certain amount of time it will download into the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. That's how I understand the system of magic to work as well. You know, the utterance of the word actually has an ability to impact matter and to affect a change in matter. Now, what are some of your perceptions about the idea of language or writing as being an alchemical process, in the sense of, you know, when we do the spirit writing, the soul writing, and we're trying to use this as an avenue to source, to spirit, you know, we're going to be confronted with more negative voices, voices that want us to stop doing this. And, you know, the process of soul writing is to burn those voices away. So I'm curious as to what your opinions are, your ideas are about the idea of deep spiritual writing as a mode of alchemy, which alchemy is an engineering arm of spirituality, one might say.
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question, Stephen, to be honest.
Okay. Well, let me put it like, let me clarify the question real quickly, Stephen, if I can. It's a difficult question, to be sure. When the idea is that when we do the soul writing, we're connecting to the source, God, for lack of a better word, a creator, a spirit, you know, the best good entity you can possibly imagine. However, in the act of doing it, we're going to encounter negative voices. You're fat, you're ugly, you know, you're too poor, you're never going to be a success. And in the process of trying to connect to the source, to God, or to the Almighty, or to whatever that entity, that good voice is, in order to connect to that, we're going to encounter less worthy voices, voices of fear, voices of frustration and self-doubt.
Do you mean within oneself or in spirit?
Well, within oneself. I'm not entirely sure that all of these negative voices that one encounters in one's head, I'm not entirely sure that they actually emanate from oneself. They might not. But I am pretty sure that they do have to be eliminated. And to me, it's this process of elimination, this process of eliminating the harmful voices, the harmful verbiage and commentary in your head. To me, this process is very much like the alchemical process of burning away any of the corrupting materials and leaving.
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, I think there are a number of questions in there, and the first thing I'd say is, yes, we've all got chatter. We all have chatter going on in our minds, our human minds, our human brains, but we also have chatter and programming that is that exists on a soul level. So I think from a conscious perspective, actually tuning into one's negative chatter, the way we put ourselves down or disempower ourselves, I think that's really important. My attitude is, if we've got negative chatter, we need to know about it because it represents a huge opportunity. And I think absolutely it is part and parcel of personal growth, self-mastery, transmutation or spiritual development. I think that beyond that, there is negative programming, negative experience and patterns within the soul, within each person's soul, and we have to get in and work with that. That's the only way that we will evolve. It's the only way that we will change what we are and therefore change what we resonate, what we manifest. That's more challenging for people to do, in my opinion, and I think that that's where metaphysics comes in, because it enables us to get in there and understand what those patterns are, and you know that's where astrology is particularly interesting. Beyond that, yes, we can connect with source, but I think it's really important to distinguish between channeling and source. In my mind, source is the purity of God. It is the source, and when people channel, they're not necessarily connecting with the purity of God. They're connecting with spirit or spirits. So it may well be that at times we can go into deep meditation, we can go even into trance, and we can connect with very evolved entities and channel very pure philosophy and wonderful insight about ourselves and what's occurring in the world, etc. Can be extremely powerful. But there are many, many opportunities to connect with lower entities as well. And I think that when it comes to channeling, when it comes to automatic writing, it's really important to consider one's personal state. So if somebody's in a funk, you know, if somebody's feeling bad, they're feeling depressed, they're feeling unwell, they're challenged by negative circumstances, then they have a potential to connect with negative entities and energies in spirit because their frequency would be lowered. So I think it's important to consider psychological and emotional state well-being before deciding to engage in channeling, because we don't want to connect with negative entities, just like we don't want to connect with negative people. So I think it's important to work on oneself and ensure that we're in a really good condition before we engage in channeling.
Oh, very good, Steve. Thank you so much for those observations. I would like to take this opportunity now to announce our call-in numbers. We're getting to that part of the show where we will be taking your calls and questions. And then when we come back from that, I wouldn't mind getting some of Maureen's opinions about this whole notion of trance and the trance state. But before we get to Maureen and her comments, that call-in number is 724-444-4851. Again, it is 724-444-4851. Please be aware that each call will automatically be placed on hold and will be answered in the order received. So try to relax, listen to the show while you wait. Once you get on the air, we ask that you are very clear, very direct with your one question, because we can only take one question per person, as this will allow for us to get to all the calls waiting for a reading. So again, that number is 724-444-4851. Okay, Maureen, before I announce that number, I did say that I wanted to talk to you about the trance state and going into trances, and I'm curious if you've ever done any trance work in your career, if you've ever experimented with that or seen people who have done it, and your opinions of the trance state.
Yeah, you know, I have. I think I've spoken about it before on a couple other shows, and usually I'm in a real funk, like wow. Steve was saying. It's interesting. I'm usually just extremely exhausted, but I don't intentionally go into it, and that's the thing. It's almost like that psychokinetic activity stuff I have going on. I would encourage myself, along with anybody else listening, to work on things like that, to have a controlled type of way of doing it, and to not be in a funk, being the best, because we have so much going on in our mind, and the thoughts and everything, because it can be quite amazing what you can tap into. And you know, I'm all for the Ouija board, for instance, and that is another way. The thing with that is I used to do a lot of scientific work to try to utilize it. You know, people shouldn't use that board if they get all freaked out like they do. But in fact, it's scary. But you know what? In fact, they have some new movie that just came out called The Ouija Board. The thing of it is, it depends on your state of mind, and people get too, you know, they go off the deep end in their imaginations. But it can also be the Ouija board is a really good trigger. Actually, there's that word. I'm going to use it. You just threw that out. Trigger for you to do controlled things on channeling. So I use it alone by myself. And I'm not asking for entities and everything else to come out. I'm just trying to tap into whatever's going on that I can pick up, you know, inside my own intuitiveness. And I found that it works very well for me, but it's exhausting. And so writing and audit, you know, she didn't, you know, you asked her in the very beginning, your guest, Janet, was named Janet, right? About, is this the same as automatic writing? She was going to be talking about, but that's really interesting to me. I don't know what you think about that, or if you've ever messed around with that, but I know somebody that does automatic writing. It's phenomenal. I don't know very many people. I don't think I know of anybody very many. Have you ever?
No, I have not. In fact, I mean, trying to find a guest to talk about automatic writing was a little bit difficult, believe it or not. I don't think there are that many of them out there.
No, there was that one woman, Steve, you might know her. Jane Roberts? She wrote, but see, she got all her information on the Ouija, back in the 1900s, some woman, also a housewife, got all her information on the Ouija board and wrote a play. Did you ever? Wow. Do you know about that? Yeah, and Janet Roberts, I think her name's Janet Roberts, she wrote a lot of things. She also would trance out on the Ouija board and She was writing, I mean, all sorts of stuff, writing books about Atlantis and all this stuff. It came all through the Ouija board by that medium. It is amazing.
I've got a lot of respect for the Ouija board, Maureen. I mean, I've used it on a couple of times, and, you know, I'm one of those people where it kind of, you know, it scares me. You know, the lifting of control, and, you know, when the planchette, that little, you know, doohickey moves, you know, by itself, you know what I'm saying? That kind of raised goosebumps on my skin. But this is very fascinating, but, you know, we've got a caller from New York for Steve now, so let's go ahead and get that done. Steve? Well, you got a caller from New York, my friend.
Wonderful. Thank you, Stephen. Who's calling from New York?
Hi, I'm Anne.
Hello, Anne. How are you doing?
Okay. So I have this question. So I've been in depression since 2007, and it's mostly because I'm really isolated socially. And even when I try to make friends, it's not that easy. And I'm thinking, you know, I've read a lot that the universe does everything for a purpose. And, you know, we're supposed to learn certain lessons from our experiences. So I'm trying to figure out, what is the lesson I'm supposed to learn from this experience?
Honestly, Anne, just tuning into you as you talk, and I'm looking at the cards, and I've pulled an astrology chart that gives me guidance on what's occurring with you as well. Honestly, the answer is you need to have fun. You need to allow yourself to do things that you enjoy. You know, you've got a very active mind, and that's wonderful, but it's also something that needs to be managed. When we have a mind that's constantly churning away, we've got to keep that in control, because otherwise it can be driving us, it can be running or ruling us. So it's important that we learn to switch it off at times. But I really feel like the solution for you is you've got to focus on the things that you enjoy and have fun. I don't feel that you allow yourself to have enough fun. And fun, enjoyment, hobbies are different for each person. But you have to focus on what you find to be your sources of enjoyment. So for some people, it's travel. For some people, it's study. Some people, it might be entertaining. It really depends. But the more you focus on the things that you enjoy, and the more you allow yourself to relax into the things that you enjoy rather than thinking so much, the more peace you will find, and the more you'll find that life just unfolds more gently for you, that situations unfold more easily, that you do meet people, etc.
You mean that life will get people, that I will get people into my life when I start focusing more on my interests? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yeah, because focusing on the things that you really enjoy doing raises your frequency. It makes you feel better. So whatever you enjoy doing, invest time in it. Put it on your schedule, your calendar, no matter how busy you are, because it builds you up. If I spend my weekend or my day doing things that I dislike, then it's automatically going to bring me down. But if I focus on the things that give me pleasure, it's going to raise my frequency. It makes me feel better. And the more I do it, the more I will feel better and joyful consistently. The more I raise my frequency that way, the better I'm going to feel, but the better the energy that I'm projecting into the world. So it creates better circumstances, better opportunities for us. That makes sense?
Yeah, except that, I mean, then you wind up, I would wind up doing a lot on my own, and I want the social interaction, so that kind of is a conflict there.
Well, what do you, you know, there must be things that you enjoy that you can also get involved in community-wise. you know, whatever your interests are, there are other people out there that are interested in those things. If I look on meetup.com, and you'll find all manner of groups and things going on where you live. And if you like, you know, you like books, you'll find a book club. If you like art and craft, you'll find other people that are interested in art and arts and crafts. And it, you know, doesn't require a lot of money. There are always people interested in the things that you enjoy, and you can get out and enjoy. But the thing is, you need to raise your vibration. You need to get out there and enjoy these things and have fun with it. Life should be joyful. We should be having fun.
Okay.
Have you tried getting out there and connecting with some groups that are aligned with your interests, your hobbies?
Well, I have done a little bit of that, but people just kind of show up for a meetup and not show up, and then they go their own way. You can't really form a circle of friends that way. You can't really connect, and you, even if you see those people afterwards, they kind of disappear out of your life after a little while. And like, you constantly have to be looking out. You can't just say, okay, you know, these people are in my life and we're always connected, because we're not.
Well, you need to go and enjoy the activities for what they are. But the more you go and enjoy the moment, the more likely you are to meet people that you can be friends with. And you've got to try different things, Anne. And you don't need 100 close friends. You need 2 or 3. And the more you get involved in these things, the more likely it is you will meet people that you can become friends with. And getting engaged in groups that are aligned with your interests is the way to do it, because you know, the people that you want to be friends with would be people that you have things in common with. So I honestly feel that that's the solution. And you know, there are times when we're alone. We can't necessarily be with other people all of the time. So we've got to learn to enjoy those times as well.
Okay.
And focus on the things you enjoy. Honestly, I feel that in this day and age, we do not spend enough time just gently focused upon having a good time, having fun. We're so focused on responsibilities and stresses and strains in life, and we have to cut back. We've got to make sure there's a good dose of fun and activities that we can look forward to. There are other things that you can do, but I feel like this is the solution for you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome, and good luck.
Thank you
very much for calling, and if you would like a reading with Steve, you can find him at psychicaccess.com. Maureen, you have a caller from Ohio.
Thank you so much. Hello, Ohio. Data.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, may I have your name, please?
Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. What can I do for you this evening?
I was just wondering, do you see them putting me back on my money with BWSA workers' comp?
Okay, I'm sorry. You were asking. I'm sorry, I didn't quite. I heard workers' comp.
If I get back on my money with workers' comp.
Okay. Oh, if you'll get back all of the money that you. Okay, got it. Obviously,
I have a hearing. I have a hearing date on November the 1st.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Okay. You know, actually, boy, I have. It is obviously this has been really in limbo land for quite a while, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it can only get better. I do feel, yes, it's still feeling like that because you haven't hit the November. But I do feel that it's going to be settled. It's going to be sorted out. There was some real unfairness about this. I absolutely see, yes, you absolutely will. And it's almost like, what I want to say to you is to keep your faith and keep looking at that shiny star, because I do see, and it does appear to me, there's going to be a good amount of generosity. Well, you deserve it. But it's going to be exactly what you would want, if not better.
Okay, and I want you to know that we appreciate all these people that can't afford to get help. We appreciate your services.
Oh, thank you so much. You're so sweet, Kathy. Thank you. You're lovely.
God bless you.
Thank you too.
I know you have a lot of other callers, so I won't keep you so you can help other people. But thank
bless
you
your
for
heart.
Your advice.
And you and I'm happy to see that this will be over and a new beginning will start. Well, the stagnation will be over soon.
Yes, okay? I hope.
Thank you, Kathy.
Okay, thank you. Thank you,
okay,
dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much. If you would like a reading from Maureen, you can find her at psychicaccess.com. Now, I have a caller from Virginia. Hello, Virginia. How may I help you this evening?
Hello.
Hello. How may I help you?
Well, I have a question. The holidays are coming up, and I have a question regarding my marriage, because things are not going to do with my husband. And I want to see, will he come, what's going on with our marriage?
Okay, what's going on with the marriage? I'll tell you what, to get a better answer, let's get a more specific question. You see?
Okay, the question because
what's going on with your marriage is probably a lot of things, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Okay, let me get a better question. It will be, do you see him coming home? Do you see him coming home just in general for the holidays? Or what do you see with him? Where is he at right now with it?
All right, will he be home for Christmas? Let's see. You know what? As much as I hate to say this, Lakeivia, I don't see him being very much of a presence for this holiday season. Now, this doesn't mean he won't drop by or something, but as far as him being an actual presence that contributes to the atmosphere of the holidays, I don't feel comfortable forecasting that, unfortunately, Lakeivia. I would much rather go the more conservative route here, judging what I do see, and let everybody be pleasantly surprised. Based upon what I'm picking up here, I would advise you not to count on him being much of a presence over the Christmas holidays. Now, what I do see happening is him probably being more of a presence after the holidays have passed for whatever reason. I don't know why. You know, I would speculate on that. Could be, you know, I don't know what his alternate plans are for the holiday. I'm not sure what could be distracting him from his family for that holiday. But unfortunately, the best thing to do right now is sort of batten down the hatches and not expect the hope for the best, but unfortunately to expect the worst here as far as this goes. You see? That would be the more realistic path to take right now, Lakeivia.
Okay, because I wanted to know because the kids were playing with them, I talked to them today. I didn't want to push anything on them. You understand?
Yes, ma'am. Judging from what I'm seeing right here, his natural habit, his natural behavior would be to show up after the holidays have passed. Maybe he doesn't like the hoopla, all the activity of the holidays, who knows, but I would expect him to kind of be, again, just be more of a presence after the holidays have passed. Maybe, you know, again, I wouldn't rule out him dropping off some presents, something like that, but you know, as far as spending significant time during the holidays, it's best not to expect that. It's best not to get our hopes up for that, okay? After the holidays, perhaps a little bit better that he'll be around, but during the holidays, I seriously doubt it. And I'd rather leave you with that impression and have you pleasantly surprised just in case. I mean, there's a very small chance that I could be wrong and that he'll surprise us. Let's hope that's the case. And if it's so, nobody would be happier than myself.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am, Lakeivia. Bless you, and I hope you have a great weekend, okay?
You do the same. Bye-bye.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye. Okay, we have a caller from Massachusetts for Steve.
Good evening. Who's calling from Massachusetts?
It is Stephen. Steve.
Hello again, Stephen. How are you?
Good, good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm doing well. What's your question for us?
Yeah, I'm having an interview with a gentleman tomorrow in regards to employment. How do you see that for me?
You have an interview tomorrow?
Yes.
What time is the interview?
A job interview.
Sorry, what time is the interview?
A job interview?
Yes, what time is the interview, Stephen?
A job interview.
Yes, but what time? Is it 9 a.m.? Is it 11 a.m.? 4 p.m.? Nah. What time of day?
Oh, it's 2:30 p.m.
2:30 p.m.?
Yeah, 2:30.
2:30, okay. And you're in the Eastern time?
Yeah.
Well, let me see. I feel good about it. I feel like it's a, you know, this opportunity is, it involves hard work, but you know that, and you're prepared to work hard. This is a role that's pretty demanding, pretty challenging, but I feel that you can get this role if you play your cards right. Do you feel that you're well prepared for the interview?
Right, I am.
Yeah. I feel you can do it. I feel that you can do it. You need to, you know, show enthusiasm and really make sure that they understand your creative, your artistic abilities, even, Stephen, and really show how interested you are in the organization, how committed you are to taking a role and staying in it for the long term. I feel if you say the right things that you can be successful. Okay?
What about me? Will it be rewarding?
Say that again, sorry?
Will it be rewarding financially?
I feel it's fair. I don't feel that this is going to be, you know, an opportunity in which you make an absolute fortune, but I feel it's a fair offer for the role that's being advertised. And I feel that you can get that role.
Okay, all right.
All right. And I wish you lots of luck, Stephen. Let us know how you do.
Yes, I definitely will. I'll say hi to Maureen, Steve.
Thank you.
And for me, please.
Thank you, Stephen. And good luck for tomorrow. We'll be thinking of you.
Thank you very much. Okay, bye.
Bye now.
Thank you very much for your call tonight, Steve. We're definitely pulling for you. We're definitely in your corner here. And again, for those who'd like to call in to get a free reading, you're definitely more than welcome. We would love to accept your call. That number is 724-444-4851. Again, the number is 724-444-4851. Don't be shy. Pick up the phone and give us a ring. Maureen, before we started getting calls, we were talking about your experiences with the Ouija board and with trance. And, you know, you're one of the most receptive people I've ever met in my entire life. I'm serious. Which is great, but for someone like you who is receptive to so many things, you know, one thing I worry about is, oh wow, you know, pains and hurts are different for someone like you than they are for someone who is not quite as receptive, you know.
Well, yeah, that is true. And you know, Stephen, I'm glad that you brought that.
It helps to have somebody acknowledge that, doesn't it? Because it's not the same.
Yes, it is, and it isn't. And you're right. And you know, I've always heard yes, and it's been like that since I was younger. And then I start thinking, there's something wrong with me. I'm too sensitive. And people, you know, those words, those tapes that go on your head. And right. The thing of it is, you know, I guess if it was easy for me to ground myself, I guess I would have been doing it. You know, like that caller that called and I was asking Steve about, which, you know, I felt bad. You know, she was in a place, and I'm thinking, you know, how can you help somebody with that? I mean, I've been struggling for many, 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 many years of trying to be contained or grounded or whatever. I'm not supposed to in this life. That's the big thing. I don't know. But it is difficult, and then you don't trust your intuition, too. It can happen very easily like that.
Have you learned to trust your intuition a little bit more now that you've accepted, hey, you know, I am a very empathic, very intuitive person, and I'm not going to change that. It is what it is, you know.
Everybody can go elsewhere with it. Yes, and you know, it's really difficult sometimes. Yeah. You know, when I was at the dentist today, and I was not happy with his or his staff, their beans, but it was funny because I was laying – you know, waiting, and I'm sitting in the chair, and I could hear, it's like, I don't mean to, but I could hear some chitter. Sometimes you can hear, like, you're super hearing, but right. I know it's not my real hearing, because I know it's not super anymore, but I could hear this too much chatter, and it's in my head, right? It doesn't belong in there.
Yeah.
It's their chatter. So, yeah, and you know what? I always look at it this way. I guess I don't need approval from anybody, but it is kind of nice sometimes. But because boy, some people have always, you know, if you came up and you say, you know, I know you're lying, lying. Oh yeah, really? You're crazy. You know, you're crazy, girl. So you know, so I just go to the Ouija board land. I just can't. kidding.
Well, I've got to tell you, you know, I've seen your birth figure, your natal chart, and it's probably one of the most psychic charts I've ever seen.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if looking at your chart, from what I see, I certainly would have no problem trusting the intuition of such a person. You know,
yeah.
Very, well, very finely tuned intuition.
Well, maybe. That's okay. That's what I'm learning. Well, by being around you guys and the show, it does ground me, though. It really does.
Yeah, I tell you, that's one thing I really love about this show is just all of the different guests bringing different things to learn. And for people like us who are extremely receptive, you know, the more you know, the better off you are. You know, that's the way I see it. And one thing I love about spirit writing and soul writing is that it helps us to make it more of a formal thing. You know, it helps us to guide that development a little bit, and also to be aware of it. That's the beautiful thing. You can go back and reread some of the conversations that you've had with spirit. Now, Steve, you made a very provocative comment earlier, Steve, about spirit being the pure essence of God, and you know, whatever it is inside of us that we contact, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's an offshoot of that. But I was hoping that maybe before we, you know, move on to other topics or what have you, I was hoping maybe you could give us a little bit more insight as to the difference between perhaps the voice we might hear in our own head and that monad, that undivisible unity that most people worship as their deity. You think we could talk about that for a few minutes?
Sure. So you're asking, how do we distinguish between our own inner chatter and spirit?
Right, exactly. I'm curious how you might, for example, differentiate these two voices.
Honestly, I think the test is evidence. So whenever I see, for example, a person that claims to be possessed in a negative sense, they'll come with their psychologist or therapist, and the question is, well, is this person truly possessed by an entity, or is this person mentally ill?
Right.
When the person is claiming to be possessed by an entity or under the influence of an entity. And I know it's an unusual example because I'm not referring to, you know, somebody challenging an angel or something like that, but I will get to that. But the psychiatrist or the psychologist will say, well, how can we determine if this person is possessed or if this person is mentally ill? And the answer is, well, evidence. If this person is possessed by another consciousness beyond themselves, then that entity will be able to give us information that this person wouldn't be able to give us.
Right.
So I think the same test applies to our channelings. If we channel, for example, writing from spirit, and it includes information that we could not know, then that's evidential. It shows that we are connecting with a higher source. It shows that we are connecting with an entity that is separate from ourselves. And equally, if we're channeling messages from spirit, then we should be channeling information, including things that we couldn't know ourselves. So for me, that's the litmus test of a true connection with spirit, whether it's a negative spirit, a low entity on the astral plane, or a purer spirit that is connecting for positive reasons.
Judge it by its works, its results. Very good. Thank you so much, Steve. Maureen, actually, we have a caller from Ohio for you.
Thank you. Hello, Ohio. Hello?
I'm just listening. You already did me, Maureen. This is Kathy.
Okay,
listen.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, she was just listening.
Yeah,
sorry,
sweet.
I thought that.
I think she's sweet. No, it's okay. We're all good. We're all going to Ohio tomorrow. Okay.
I've never actually been there. I've always wanted to visit that place.
Oh, yeah. It's really fun. I got pulled over by the troopers on the freeway, and I was driving 90 miles an hour, and I got out of the car, and I fell on my face. And that wasn't because I was drinking either.
Oh, wow. Maybe he was just nervous. Maybe he was just a handsome trooper, and you were
I was like 18 years old. He goes, have you been drinking? I was laughing so hard. No, it was 2 in the morning. I tripped. I slipped on my shoe.
Poor Maury.
It was funny. It was funny.
That's hilarious.
Okay, well, there you have it. Goodbye. Oh,
okay, well, I think that should probably about do it here. I don't believe we have any more callers in the queue. Did you have any more observations you'd like to add, Steve, about what we were talking about earlier in terms of channeling spirit through writing? Or Maureen, did any of you guys have anything to add on that one?
No, I've said everything.
Okay, we pretty much said everything. Very good, very good. Well, in that case, we've come to the end of yet another wonderful show. We'd love to thank Janet Connor from JanetConnor.com for joining us tonight and educating us regarding soul writing. Big thanks to Doug C., who labors behind the scenes to keep all of us on track as our executive producer. Thank you very much, Doug. And I'd also love to thank Maureen and Steve for adding their special magic and intelligence to tonight's show to make it really shine. Maureen, actually, you have something pretty special for us planned next week.
Yes, I'm really excited. In fact, I'm leaving for New York tomorrow afternoon, and Sal Nicosia, I'm pretty sure, who is the owner of the Shanley Hotel in New York, and he's quite revered by the paranormal community. I'm going to be on site and doing the show from there. Oh. And he's going to be my guest, and I can't wait. And he's a great guy. I was there last year for the event, and so we're going to hear about it. So it just has a really great history of some of really important people, political, the Roosevelts, a lot of people staying there, a lot of activity. So it's going to be quite a fun show, and it'll be day before Halloween, so I hope everybody can join us.
Oh,
live in the chat room. Yeah.
That's going to be awesome. I'm definitely looking forward to that one. It's going to be a lot of fun. Do not miss that, everybody. Next week, live. Maureen is live from the Shanley Hotel. I want to say that's in upstate New York or somewhere in New York State, isn't it?
It's not. You know what?
I can't pronounce the name of the city.
I can't. No, you're going to have to do this, Steve.
Neponak? No.
Yeah, Neponak.
Some Indian name, but it's...
I know it. You know, it's funny. I always say, I don't even think it's in the Poconos, but it's 2.5 hours away driving from New York City. I know that. It's beautiful. It's quite beautiful.
Well, we wish you Godspeed, and we hope you have a wonderful and a safe trip, Maureen. We're going to see you... live on scene from the Shanley Hotel next week. Everyone, have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next Thursday evening.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.